Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, June 27th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us, drop us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. We got some lovely emails in the past week, just listeners who were requesting certain guests or just had some feedback or just wanted to say hi, and that's our shout out to you, Andrea, who wrote a super, super lovely email. So send those on over, ken@thisshowisogay.com. Of course, strolling over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our dog and pony little gay radio show. And then go to the Facebook. We know you have an account. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. So much to get through in this lightning storm here in southern Vermont. Let's get things started with our first guest. Hey, first guest, are you ready to go?
I am so ready.
It's like you're ready two times over. Let's introduce you. David Reddish is the author of the award-winning novel Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes, A Savage Journey into a Wretched Hive of Scum and Supervillainy, a novel I tore through this past weekend. He's written the forthcoming The Passion of St. Sergius and St. Bacchus. He's written screenplays, television sitcoms. He is a self-proclaimed uber geek, which we will deconstruct in just a few. Here to talk all things spandex and capes, David Reddish, welcome. Welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thanks, dude. What's going on?
How are you?
Oh my gosh. I am in no danger of being struck by lightning, which I hear is an enviable position at the moment.
There are many superheroes who got their powers in such a way. Are you sure you do not want to chance it?
Yeah, you know, I knew someone, this is true, I actually knew someone that was struck by lightning twice.
Wow.
She was a little odd.
A little odd?
She would see, this is the honest God truth, she would see animals that were not there.
Wow.
They were not real. And so, I prefer to avoid getting struck by lightning.
Alright. You would like to get your superpowers in a different way.
Yeah, I'm all about, like, the radioactive fallout or, you know, spider bite, whatever it is.
All right, well, let's get some terminology out of our way, lest some of my listeners get a little bit confused. For our listening audience, David Reddish, define the word geek.
Oh, gosh, the geeks. Well, geeks are like, we're like the chosen people of God, like in the Ten Commandments or something like that. Stanley came down from Mount Sinai and said, here are your, you know, superheroes. We are people who obsess over superheroes and science fiction and fantasy and all things that you would, associate with the fantastic or the larger than life. And we sort of revel in that and it sort of becomes part of our lives. There's no, you know, for geeks, I don't know that there's much delineation between what is real and what is imagined. They have the same kind of emotional weight, shall we say.
Now, is there a test you can give me right now to determine whether or not I am a geek? Because I have a theory, but, you know.
There's no single litmus test.
Okay.
I mean, let me ask you this one. Have you read a Harry Potter book?
Many. One could argue seven of them.
I'd say then you have a little bit of the geek going for you.
All right. Now, how do I make my way up to executive geek?
The executive geek. Well, you know, there's geeks. You're talking into the book, aren't you?
We'll get to the book, but yeah, executive geeks. I want that status.
Executive geek. You have to bathe.
I do. Okay.
Because some geeks, you know, we're kind of obsessive. We geeks, and some geeks have a problem with that, with the bathing. You have to bathe. You have to dress well. You have to present yourself well. Hold a job. Not live with your parents.
Okay.
And you still have to, you know, be able to quote all the Star Wars movies, including the prequels, backwards and forwards.
Wow. I was good until that last one.
Well, I bet you could do it if you tried.
All right. I got to put some effort into it. Now, just to do some comparison, what is the difference between a geek and a fanboy?
Now, this one gets me in trouble. Because
okay.
Some people really hate the sort of difference that I, you know, the difference that I say is the difference between a geek and a fanboy. The fanboy is, you know, the sort of geek who, the fanboy geek might still live with his parents. He might not bathe. He has no social skills. He doesn't get a date. He's not well groomed, has no sense of hygiene. And, you know, certainly spends more time playing World of Warcraft than he does, you know, doing anything else.
Okay.
Associating with living people, you know, in the same physical realm.
So that's a fanboy. Now, my assumption is, and you tell me if I'm wrong, and not just because I know which movie you watched when you were sick, my assumption is that you have quite a bit of geek in you.
Mine's bigger. Yeah.
Okay.
I generally have a lot of geek going on for me, but I do bathe and I do leave the house. So executive geek I am.
What is your history with comic books?
Oh gosh, my history with comic books. I mean, I don't even know how old that was the first time I read one. I think I was maybe 4 or 5.
Okay.
I read from a pretty early age, and I got. It actually turned out to be a really important Batman comic where the new Robin, Tim Drake, becomes Robin with Batman for the first time. For your listeners and for those who may not know, there have been a number of different Robins over the years with Batman, and the original Robin, Dick Grayson, went on to become Nightwing, and then there was another one that died because we all hated him.
Yeah.
And then the third Robin, Tim Drake, who's the cool Robin, became Robin sometime in the early to mid 80s, and that was actually the first comic book I ever bought. And somehow, by a miracle of God, I still have it.
Wow!
I don't even know how that happened, but I still have it locked away.
Now, I decided at an early age that DC was not the way to go, and so I was only a Marvel devotee. What does that say about me in the comic book world?
Well, that's interesting, because I do think that says a lot. And I just had this conversation recently. I tend to be more of a DC guy, Batman being my favorite hero. Though it's interesting, I identify more with the Marvel characters. And I think that's why they tend to be a little bit more popular. The Marvel characters are younger by about 30 years than DC heroes.
Okay.
And so they were created at a different time, and of course they were created with different social trends in mind. So I think they're more human characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely more flawed, and I think they're probably a little bit more grounded in our reality than, say, the DC heroes, which were all kind of created at different times by different people for different styles. You know, Superman was, very patriotic, and Wonder Woman was kind of mythological and fantastic, and Batman was very detective story, film noir, and they were all, confined to their own universe. And somewhere along the way, DC looked at Marvel and saw how Spider-Man and the X-Men and everybody were able to do these big team-ups and said, hey, we should do that. And so they sort of combined them all into the same universe. Not that it makes any sense at all that there is the same universe, but hey, it's a lot of fun. So.
Now, you are on right this very second on This Show Is So Gay. What definitively, and this is very exciting for me, because 4 years of the show, this is the first time I've gotten to talk about comic books. Is there not a connection between gay men and comic books?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you could scientifically measure a connection, because I've lost plenty of second dates as soon as they found out about it.
No! That's not true.
Oh, it's completely true. I mean, and maybe it's the lightsaber remote control. I don't know. Maybe it's the Harry Potter replica wands. I don't know.
These okay.
are both phallic objects.
They are indeed.
I think the comic books and geekery things in general do have a strong gay following, superheroes specifically. Because I think there's kind of an element of duality.
Mm-hmm.
To being gay, the idea of being in the closet or, maybe having part of your life that you have to hide. I think
right.
that was certainly true for a certain generation. That's not quite as true anymore. Being different. Superheroes, by definition, are people who are special in a fantastic way, mm-hmm. in a wonderful way that they can use their powers for good or ill. But they're special people. They're specially endowed. And oftentimes they have to pose like normal human beings with their secret identities. Underneath it all, behind the mild-mannered, reporter stuff, there's the great Superman just there, this beautiful, special thing that makes the world a better place.
Now, do you have a comic book memory in your head right now that is definitively gay? Just something that now that you look back, oh, I can see how those two things were connected.
Oh, I mean, it's funny because I sort of recognize them, even from a young age, I sort of recognize the before I think I even knew what being gay was,
mm-hmm.
I knew that superheroes were analogous with being an outsider. And, that's something that the novel Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes definitely delves into, but, I always identified with being an outsider you know, first.
Right.
That was my draw to being a comic book fan. And as I got older and as I knew I was gay, I started to see the metaphors, particularly in the case of something like X-Men, where it's very directly, and especially in modern times where, you know, the gay rights movement is sort of the civil rights struggle of our time. And particularly with the X-Men films, which have, you know, gay directors, writers, producers, whatever,
right,
actors, they're certainly informed by that, by the gay rights struggle. And so, you know, the first time I saw X-Men, it was a huge, huge box office hit, and X-Men 2 was even bigger. But X-Men 2 especially is about being gay, I think, on a fundamental, metaphorical level.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And X-Men 3 you loved.
X-Men 3 is god awful. I'm going to keep the profanity out of here because, you know, FCC,
it's a family gay show. It's a family gay show.
Gay family show. Hey, well, that's nice. I'll keep the profanity off, but you know, X-Men 3 is a horrid acid stain on the face of American cinema and on the comic book film genre in general. You know you have problems, and this maybe again speaks to being gay, but I came out of that movie going, Magneto's right. Why is it that the genocidal maniac is the one I'm identifying with?
Right.
In this movie? I think there's a problem here, and I don't think I'm the one with the problem, so, hey.
Oh, gosh, I miss my X-Men sitting here right now.
You used to have a set of X-Men, like, sitting in the...
I miss reading them. I'm having all these intense, like, I have these really intense X-Men memories.
Oh, well, you should go pick up, because, you know, North Star of the X-Men just got married.
Which brings us to... Yeah, see, I will never call him an X-Man. I understand that is where his affiliations now lie. But, yes, we just talked about this on last week's show. North Star just got married. The Million Moms, which are really only, like, 3,000 moms, had a whole campaign against it. Did you read The Wedding Ceremony?
I have not read it yet. I've been so wrapped up in my own work, unfortunately, being self-involved, that I have yet to read the issue. I definitely will read it when it comes out in trade paperback, though.
And who else do we have? We have Batwoman.
We have Batwoman. Kate Kane is a fantastic lipstick lesbian, as is her on-and-off girlfriend, Renee Montoya, who's the Question right now
in
the DC Universe. And then the Green Lantern, Alan Scott, who is the original Green Lantern. The old Green Lantern just came out of the closet. So
there's a lot gay going on there in the comic books.
There's a lot of gay going on in the comic books. It says something that the comic book editors at DC and Marvel really want to diversify and keep things current. It remains to be seen how, you know, so having a sort of established character like Alan Scott come out of the closet, how that will affect things. But in the case of North Star, who's always been gay, it's not that big a deal. It's just a big deal that he's finally getting married, and which inevitably means his husband's going to get killed off.
Oh, soon.
That happens in comic book heroes.
Yeah. I mean, they'll have a honeymoon, but yeah, no, he'll be dead soon.
Yeah, he'll be dead. But he'll come back, because that's what comic book heroes do.
All right, so now it is time to talk about the book, Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes, A Savage Journey into a Wretched Hive of Scum and Supervillainy. As I said, I read it this past weekend. Give us a synopsis.
Oh, gosh. Well, it takes place in 2008 at the San Diego Comic-Con, and it's sort of about a group of geeks, a group of creative people, which I think geeks tend to be creative people.
Yes.
Who go there and sort of find this sense of community and go through this this period of self-examination and existential crisis on the cusp of what they see as being the sort of geek revolution, you know, with The Dark Knight coming out and with Watchmen about to come out. You know, it's sort of like the golden age of geekdom is hitting, and they're riding this wave. And how do they deal with that? How do they deal with that in their personal lives? How do they deal with the fact that they're outsiders, you know, for most of the year, but then for 4 or 5 days they go and they're just part of this great community where everybody just loves each other because everybody loves comic books.
And the main character's name is?
Liquin Sonos, yeah.
And I tried to do some Google searching, try to figure out, all right, so why is that this character's name? I came up empty.
Well, you know, it's funny. I have no idea where that came from. I was And you're the first person to ask me about that, I think.
How is that possible?
People say, you know, Liquin, okay. Well, I don't know where Liquin came from. I could tell you exactly where I was. I was laying on my bed staring up at the popcorn ceiling in my bedroom, and suddenly out of nowhere there was this name, Liquin. And his original name was actually Liquin Del Mar. And there he was. And he was this fully formed character in my head. And I have no idea where he came from. I have no idea what Liquin is, but it just sort of came out of the universe. And changed his name to Liquin Sonos, Sonos being the Greek god of dreams.
Well, let me read a quote. Let me read a quote there from our hero, Liquin. I'm calling him our hero.
You can call him a hero, or you can call him he's certainly a protagonist.
I'm calling him, he's my hero. This is a quote here. Quote, checking myself in the mirror one more time, I threw on my backpack and con badge. I gazed at my reflection, letting my imagination flower. For a moment, I almost believed that I was a colonial cadet on a battle star defending humanity from genocide by evil robots. One of the many beauties of con, imagination and reality seemed to overlap, and for a weekend, I could disguise myself from my problems. Now, I've never actually been to a Comic-Con. It's an experience like no other.
That would be a frickin' understatement, yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely true. Particularly in the case of the San Diego Comic-Con, which is just unparalleled.
All right, so I'm going to have to check that out. Now, for folks who want to read the book, how can they get it?
We are on Amazon, and we are on Barnes & Noble. You can simply just go in and you search for Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes, and the book comes up. It's exclusive to ebook, although, special announcement, at the San Diego Comic-Con this year, I will be there doing a signing.
Wow.
Friday, yeah. Friday the 13th, whatever that portends. Friday the 13th, I will be at Comic-Con, and we will have a limited Comic-Con exclusive print run of Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes that I will be happily autographing.
Oh, so exciting.
For all those who would like a copy, yes.
So exciting. And now I know that you were excited that you got to call the music for this week's episode of this show is so gay. This is the part of the show, David Reddish, where you get to tell our listening audience what some of your song selections say about David. It's a little self-analysis, and yours are particularly interesting because we have a couple theme songs here. So let's talk about a couple of them real quick. What does Hole's Celebrity Skin say about David? It's kind of your origin story here.
Obsessed with Courtney Love.
Okay.
Which is also true. Whole Celebrity Skin, from the first time I heard it, I just thought it was just such an awesome, awesome song because it's about self-loathing and it's about sort of self-aggrandizement at the same time. It's about, you know, thinking you're beautiful and thinking you're ugly. And, it's about celebrity and it's about wanting attention and getting attention. And, I'm an attention whore. I'm not afraid to admit.
Nice.
So, that's definitely my theme song would be, Celebrity Skin is, you know, the constant self-loathing, the constant self-aggrandizement, those weird, polarized, contradictory feelings.
Now, how about the theme song of the book, The Smashing Pumpkins, The End is the Beginning is the End? What does that song say about David?
I don't know what it says about me so much as what it says about the book. But from the time I sat down to write the book, that song was there.
Nice.
And I think it symbolizes the character of Liquin and, you know, Kate and Windsor and Brigham, the other main characters of the book. I think it's more about them than it is about me. And it's about being an outsider. It's about being a freak and sort of feeling shamed by that, sort of feeling shamed by the society that you live in. But it's also sort of about reveling in that and in, you know, taking pride in the fact that you're different, taking pride in the fact that you're unique, because it means you're special. You know, the only way something is truly perfect is if it's flawed in some strange way. The flaw is what makes it interesting, and the flaws are what I think make us as people interesting. I think they are what make my characters interesting.
Yeah. And the song takes on new meaning when you read through the book.
Yes, it definitely does. And it's also about sort of the cyclical nature of time. And that's one thing that comic books, you know, we were talking earlier about people come back from the dead. People, you know, nothing is ever the status quo for very long in comic books. It's constantly sort of refreshing itself. And the end is the beginning is the end. It's certainly true for my characters in that story, and it's certainly true for comic book characters, and I think it's true for the world in general, that it's just this ongoing cycle of everything is old, everything is new, nothing really ends.
Yeah.
Everything is just beginning. Yeah.
And really, folks, you need to check out the book, because it really does take on just quite the poignant meaning. How about your ultimate comic book crush?
My ultimate comic book crush?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's weird. I've never been sexually attracted to an animated character before. And some people, believe it or not, find that amazing. I was at a comic book convention last year where I spent hours and hours. I was there with a friend who was talking to a guy that draws some erotic comic books.
Mm.
Both of whom's names shall remain unsaid.
Of course.
Neither of them could get over the fact that I had never been turned on by a comic book. But that said, the closest thing I've had to a crush would be Magneto. I'm obsessed with Magneto.
Wow.
I don't know why. It's probably not healthy, given that he's an old man and kind of a, you know, mass murdering nutcase. But he has a really, really sweet helmet.
Nice.
I say. And maybe I have a thing for guys in pink helmets. I don't know. I don't know.
That's the key to the second date right there.
Well, guys also do see the Magneto helmets, because I do have Magneto helmets at home on display in my living room.
Wow.
And they're sort of confused by those. And, you know, I don't know. But they're still kind of phallic. You know, they're kind of forced.
Oh, yeah. Magneto was never my guy.
No? Who are you turned on by?
Well, I will say that I've always been quasi-obsessed with Longshot.
Oh, Longshot? You know, it's funny. You and a straight friend of mine are obsessed with Longshot.
But I did have, and I feel like such a cliche saying this, and I feel really, I'm hesitant to say it, and maybe I'll edit it out later, we'll find out. But I did have a very brief, as in like two-panel Wolverine moment. And I feel like such a cliche saying that, but it was a very specific storyline, and so it's defensible. So I feel okay.
Storyline was that.
This is how, see, I'm going to totally geek out right now. This is how bad it is. Really and truly, I can't believe I'm saying this. It was when Diamondback and Dazzler switched bodies.
Oh my God.
I know. Second dates are going really well with me too. But it was when Diamondback in Dazzler's body tried to come on to Wolverine. And there's a couple panels there, and I'm just going to leave it right there. And assume that no one listening knows what I'm talking about, so we'll just leave it at that. All right.
I completely forgot about that storyline. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wolverine never did it for me. Hugh Jackman, yes. Does, you know, definitely did. But Wolverine, you know, I can't get past the smoking and the fact the man probably has BO and smells terrible.
I'm just saying it was a very specific circumstance, and it's defensible.
Okay. I get that, and I get, you know, many of my friends have a Robin fetish, you know, the Tim Drake or Nightwing, you know, not the underage, you know, Robin, but the, you know, college boy Robin.
That's a therapy thing waiting to happen. I'm not touching that one. All right, so you are going to be at Comic-Con on Friday the 13th.
I will be signing on Friday the 13th. I will be there the entire time, the 11th through the 15th. That's Wednesday to Sunday, hanging out. Getting my geek on.
I gotta make it out there one year, it sounds like.
Well, you gotta do it. I mean, bring the show. Hell.
If I bring this show as So Gay, you're saying there will not be a shortage of people to talk to?
Oh, no. There will be people coming out of any orifice you can imagine. they will be everywhere. And you should totally do a gay podcast there, because we gay people definitely have a presence at Comic-Con.
All right. I'm going to have to make my way out to Comic-Con. All right, so everybody, go on over to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble, download the book. The title of the book, one more time for everybody, is Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes. Go on over to Comic-Con and check out David. He's signing copies. David, an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
It's my pleasure, Ken. Thanks so much.
Keep on writing.
Absolutely.
All the best.
All right, I'll talk to you later, dude.
Bye. I'm all I want to be. All right, folks, and we are back. So last night here in Brattleboro, I had a chance to go see Transfigurations, Transgressing Gender in the Bible, a one-person play presented by a performance activist. I don't hear that phrase nearly enough. Peterson Toscano, and here sitting with me right this second, it's like I stalked you. Peterson, welcome to this show, Is So Gay.
You're a brilliant stalker.
I just pounce right there in the right after the Q&A. How do you feel the performance went last night? And then I'll tell you how it went.
Okay. Well, I was a little anxious because people tell me that in Vermont that you can't do Bible stuff because everyone's so post-religion and anti-religion.
We're post-everything here in Vermont.
Post-toasties.
Yeah.
And it was such a warm reception. I mean, what I do is such a bizarre thing to begin with. I mean, it's comedy, it's drama, it's scholarship all mixed together. And who knows how people are going to receive it. But I thought it was a very warm reception, and people really engaged afterwards for the Q&A.
It went really well, so this is good.
Oh, that's
we're on the same. So for the folks listening across the world who perchance weren't able to make it last night and haven't seen it, how would you? Gosh, I can't even imagine how you would wrap this up into some sort of synopsis. But try.
All right. Well, it is a play about gender nonconforming characters in the Bible. Mm-hmm. In both the Hebrew and the Christian scriptures. My background is such that for much of my life, I was a born-again evangelical conservative anti-gay Republican Christian.
Yes.
And then I got born
again. I can't even fit that in your bio, but go ahead, yes.
So I got born again
right.
And came out of the closet finally after trying to beat the snot out of myself. And, you know, came out as a gay man, and I had this whole past I had to do something with, and it could either chuck it all away or unpack it. And I did, and I started looking critically at the Bible, which is a weapon used against queer folks to beat us up.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't walk away from that and knowing it so well. And so then I began to incorporate it in my work as a performance artist because I began doing plays. My first one being Doing Time in the Homo Nomo Halfway House.
I saw it years and years ago.
And so the Bible's just played a big part in that, and that's grown. And so this play is a one-person, multi-character, multi-gender play. It becomes a meditation on gender. And it's less so ultimately about Bible stories and more so about our own bodies and our own gender expression.
Well, there are two audiences. There were two audiences last night. There were those of us who were standing in front of you, and then there's also you, Peterson. And I would agree. I thought the audience, as a New Yorker, I thought, gosh, just the way that people are responding, that would never happen in New York with a lot of just noises and a lot of audience. It was great. You could really feel it. I think you said it in the Q&A, like, oh, I could actually hear you.
Yeah, snorts of laughter, sobbing at one point. I mean,
yes.
It was really intense audience.
Just people say, oh, there was a lot of just like, oh. And so it was really powerful piece. So there's that audience, but then there's also you, Peterson. How does this work feed you?
Well, I am shy by nature, but fortunately my characters are not.
They are not.
And so when I'm on stage, I can be really open and present in a way that's really difficult for me to do in the real world. And my characters are very grounded and real and just there and diverse. So for me, it's a wonderful way of feeling comfortable in my own body.
Wow.
In front of people, which I'm almost never comfortable in my own body. And so that's a great experience for me. And also, I'm a character actor, and so I am a shapeshifter. I take on different personalities. People tell me that I even look taller or shorter from character to character. Huh. The body even shifts. And that's just so stimulating to me, mentally and physically, to have that experience.
I will say, the quote of the night for me didn't even come from you. It was the woman sitting right in front of me when she said at one point, quote, that's a whole different accent. So I thought that was a real moment.
A whole different
one
accent.
Could argue there are all these different accents. Now, is it okay that I went home and looked at my cat, that's who was home last night, and said, I am Deborah. Is that...
I love that.
I had that moment.
Yeah.
That was the character
yeah.
with whom I really connected.
It's interesting. This Deborah character is a unique character in the Hebrew scriptures in that she's a poet, a prophet, a judge, and a warrior. Mm. Not your typical Jewish mother.
No, not at all.
And not that women can't take on those roles, but traditionally, even today, it's rare to see women in those roles. And what I love about that character is she is strong in every sense of the word and a presence, much taller and bigger than I am, fills the space.
Yeah.
And I love stepping into that character. So what about Deborah did you connect with?
I just thought it would make my cat respect me more in that moment if I said it really with authority. There was a coolness to her as well, a very instantly assessing the situation and even if she didn't, it just felt like even if she didn't know how to respond, she still had direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very definitive direction that this is my path and this is the path I'm going to go down and I stand by it. And it, I don't know, it really, there was a confidence to it that I really respected and perhaps wanted to take on some of that. So it was quite lovely to behold.
It's interesting, you're not the only gay man who has said to me that they found Deborah to be someone that they connected with, which I wouldn't think for a lot of gay men. But there is something very gender variant about her,
right. Very
strong and secure and forceful, but not violent, although it's a very violent story, ultimately. Right.
But still, there's something about being able to say, I am Deborah. It's just, even just sat up a little bit more. You sit up a little bit more. So you've had different audiences, and as you said last night in the Q&A, you've performed this in front of people who are well-versed in the scripture. I am but a gay Jew from New Jersey who is not well-versed in the scripture. For people who are maybe on the more conservative side of the spectrum, how has this been received with them?
It has been received shockingly well. I had a theory that it would be received well because I stick very close to the text. And for folks who come from a conservative evangelical background, that's important to respect the text. They don't like the conclusions I come up with.
Right.
But they can't fault me in my method of how to get there. And then they're left with a conundrum like, well, what he said technically is in the text. And they respect that. And then they have to go away and grapple with it. So I've never had an issue with conservative people when I do this stuff. In fact, I find they get much more relaxed, in part because we're not talking about my butt.
There you go.
Because when you talk about gay stuff, they're immediately all up in my butt,
Yes. Wondering
what's been there, what will be in there, what's currently in there.
What's there right now.
Right this moment. Yeah. And I'm like, let's get my butt off the table for a moment, and let's talk about an Ethiopian eunuch in the Bible, which they know the story. And I was like, what does an Ethiopian eunuch look like? And when they realize that, oh, this is a sexual minority, this is a gender variant person, this is someone who you can't even tell if they're male or female, they're suddenly being able to embrace a queer person in their own sacred text.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes everything for them.
Yeah. And I don't want to ruin things for other people because there is a way, which we will say in a second, that they can actually purchase lecture. It's important. You got to do the self-promotion.
I
will say that I will never listen to Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat the same way again. Not that I know every word, but I do. But I will not be able to listen to it the same way again. So that's a piece of it. I found that I was riveted.
In a way, I not necessarily ruin that story for people, but they cannot see that story ever again.
Yeah.
And even people who disagree with my interpretation, they're stuck with those images in their head. And now I have a question for you. I always wonder, what is it like for someone who doesn't know the Bible a lot? And my opening character kind of tries to calm people and say, don't worry, you don't need to know about the Bible. But I worry. I'm like, well, maybe you do to really appreciate the play. What was your experience?
You know, I think for me, I attack it more in a character study way, then there's no connection to me to stories that then lead to lessons that Jesus has imparted. That's just not present for me at all. So I am first and foremost just looking at the emotional connection between the characters and not necessarily the teachings piece and the disciples piece. And I have a vague sense that there might be a prophet or two. But I have to say, I am woefully ignorant of all things disciple and all things Thomas. I think it allows me a different experience maybe than some other folks because I am 100% going in on emotion.
That's great. No, that's really helpful to me to hear, and that's what I'm hoping for because ultimately the Bible stories are not that important to the play.
Right.
It's these people, their bodies, their experiences. That's what really is important, that they happen to be couched in an ancient story. Well, that makes it really interesting because these ancient stories are so important to some people today.
Right.
And so it has an activist edge to it. It has an educational edge to it. But the real, to me, the real part of it is, hey, there are people in the world who are gender nonconforming, who are gender variant, who are trans. Let's spend a little moment sitting in those waters.
Yeah. So now you are headed off to Chicago to go get deconstructed in front of a large group of people?
Well, later this year, yes. I'll be at the Society for Biblical Literature Conference, which is the big jamboree of Bible scholars from all over the world. And somehow, I don't even know how it happened, but I got invited to present my play and to give it to a panel of scholars in advance for them to preview, and then I will present it, and then they will give their peer review in front of everyone. And all of these scholars, and it's been shocking how well received this has been by scholars.
That's
and
great.
I've been to some really great seminaries and stuff. So queer folks seem to like it, and it's entertaining, but it also is grounded in scholarship.
So now where can folks go if they want to learn more about the things you're doing, including perhaps purchasing a DVD of a lecture performance?
Well, last time was the first time I ever sold that DVD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had it recorded for these scholars, and I thought, oh, well, people are always asking me for a DVD. Why don't I just, you know, package it up? And so it is not available yet online. But soon, I think it will be at quakerbooks.org.
Great.
I think they'll be selling it for me. Also, if they want to know more about my own bizarre ex-gay story of how I tried to de-gay myself, my play Homo Nomo is available also at quakerbooks.org. And there's a new documentary out called This Is What Love in Action Looks Like, which is available right now on Hulu and Netflix.
Great.
And at Amazon you can get it, and at iTunes.
Now, did you see today's gay news?
No, I haven't been on news at all today.
Big deal today that Exodus International,
did you read about that?
That they're at least
rebranding.
Walking back some
they're rebranding. That's what they're doing. I am highly suspicious of what they're looking for, a new audience. They know that there's this growing gay Christian audience that in some ways is desperate for some validation from our former oppressors.
Right.
And we have leaders already. We have wonderful people who have been, you know, working with us. We don't really need the Exodus people. I think it's an important political move that they say what they say, but I'm cynical about it because it is about they're reading the handwriting on the wall saying, our time is up, and we need to find new audience. And so let's rebrand it.
A stunning new logo, and I just don't feel you're giving the logo credence that they've... I don't know what it's going to be, but I think the rebranding is going to be a stunning new logo, and we're all going to connect to it.
Okay,
I think it's going to be much like the Rainbow Oreo. We're just going to be right there. We're going to be right there. A website people can go to?
PetersonToscano.com. And if you forget that, just do a Google search for Transgender Bible. You'll find me. And I've got a YouTube channel as well. It's P2Son, the letter P, the number 2, S-O-N. Lots of little cute, fast videos, including some gender-bending Bible stories.
And how many daddies does Jesus have?
Jesus has two daddies.
There you go.
That's my newest play.
There you go.
A ridiculously serious look at Scripture.
And people can go to the site and find out places that you're performing and all upcoming
things.
That's
right. I'll be in the next few months in St. Paul, Minnesota, in various parts of the UK. I'll be in Malta, so any of your Maltese listeners will see me.
If I have Maltese listeners, please drop me a line. Ken@theshowsokay.com. I just kind of want to know.
Exactly. I'll say hi to them when I'm in Malta.
Please do.
I will.
I'll give you magnets to give to them.
Okay.
Peterson, a pleasure having you on the show. Really, it was a thing to behold.
Oh, good. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, folks, and we are back. Now, I know I did the shout-out at the start of the show, but there was a preference expressed that you partake in the shout-out. So, hello to
Andrea.
Well, it might be Andrea.
Or
we don't know. Andrea Zuckerman, one of your heroes.
Yes.
You have no idea who that is.
No.
You have no idea who Andrea Zuckerman is.
You are correct.
Oh, my God.
Who is it?
Really? Should I even bother?
Yes, please bother.
Andrea Zuckerman, played by Gabrielle Carteris when she was like 52 years old, playing a high school student in Beverly Hills 90210. Very important character as part of my development. She had absolutely nothing to do with my development, but it's just, I enjoy her immensely.
You
Andrea
also
Zuckerman.
Enjoy pointing out things I don't know.
That hasn't happened. But let's talk about last week's episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. So what did you think? All right. No, I won't do that. All right. Some updates to last week's stories. Going back to Uganda real quick, responding to growing international criticism of anti-gay efforts in Uganda, the government said in a statement on Friday, 2 days after our show, I assume that we were part of the international criticism of anti-gay efforts, they said that they do not discriminate against people of a different sexual orientation. Which is a little bit curious because it's illegal to be gay. The statement said, quote, no government official is supposed to harass any section of the community, and everybody in Uganda enjoys the freedom to lawfully assemble and associate freely with others. It was signed by Ethics Minister Simon Lokoto, the official accused by gay activists of orchestrating a hate campaign that includes breaking up gay conferences and threatening to expel civil society groups that he says promotes homosexuality in the conservative East Africa country. This is the first time the government is making a statement that appears to recognize the rights of gay people in Uganda, where This Show Is So Gay is a very popular show. Okay, that's not part of the story. But I assume that we had something to do with that. That's good.
That's good.
Really good. It's quite the relative word there when we're talking about something that's still illegal in Uganda.
Yeah.
So this next story we're going to file under the category of we clearly have no idea what we're doing anywhere in the country. Because I read this and I got confused because it seems that we covered the exact opposite story on last week's show. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit by a former student who challenged the right of Augusta State University's counseling program to require all students to learn to treat gay patients in a supportive, non-judgmental manner. Judge J. Randall Hall found that the university's rules did not violate the rights of religious students, such as the woman who sued, which is almost the exact opposite of the woman in the other state for whom the legislature is creating all these rules to allow for that. So it just proves that from state to state, we actually have no idea what we're doing.
Yep.
And there's no consistency, but I guess we're for states' rights, but fine. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's a little weird.
Yeah.
Now, one of the biggest political pundits of our time, and I know your go-to guy when you're looking for, hey, what does someone think about the news? Chuck Norris speculated, weren't you like, you had that big in your office. You have a big Walker Texas Ranger poster.
No, I have a Hogwarts poster.
So close. So close. Chuck Norris speculated this week that the Obama administration had something to do with the Boy Scouts of America board members James Turley's pledge to work to change the organization's policy against gay scouts and leaders. In a column for, now I know this is your go-to publication, Ammoland.com. That's Ammoland.com, titled, Is Obama Creating a Pro-Gay Boy Scouts of America? Really very subtle title. I wonder what he thinks. Mm-hmm. The 80s action star. I resent that it says 80s action star. I think he's 90s as well. He attempted to draw connections between Turley and the White House. He wrote, quote, is it a coincidence that Turley is in tight cahoots with the White House and that he's the only BSA national board member in 100 years to oppose its pro-traditional family stance? Turley released a statement earlier this month declaring his opposition to the Boy Scout of America's policy, excluding homosexuals, and Chuck Norris thinks it's a big conspiracy. Yeah. Now, many op-eds out there this week. There were many different op-eds, and I wanted to talk about a couple of them. The biggest drama of the week is Oreos.
You mean the Pride Oreos?
The Pride Oreos.
Oh, yeah.
Now, have you read about the, you saw the Pride Oreos?
All over Facebook. All of my friends are posting and sharing the Pride Oreos.
20,000 Facebook comments alone in the past couple days about the Pride Oreo. This is a very big thing, the Pride Oreo. If you haven't seen a picture of the Pride Oreo, it's an Oreo with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 layers of creamy goodness. natural, organic, creamy goodness.
Yes.
Grown in the cornfields of Vermont.
Free range, right?
Free range.
Free range creaminess.
The cream cows had these really big cages. They had room to move around. So it was totally fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Locally grown.
Yes.
Locally grown Oreos. These are all the things you have to say when you have a show in Vermont.
Yes.
So,
yes. I get them in my CSA, actually. Yeah.
I didn't get them in my half share. I think I got Hydrox. Hydrox, very big part of my childhood.
Oh.
Because Oreos, not kosher. But apparently they are kosher now. And I don't understand how they're not kosher. They're not made of any substance that would or would not be kosher. So I thought that they would be fine. So we always had to have Hydrox, the Jewish Oreos. But now I hear Oreos are kosher.
Yeah.
I digress.
Indeed.
So the Pride Oreos, they had a picture of this Oreo. And then you had all of these youths and some adults with comments like, I will read some of them. I'm not going to have Oreos again. You want to lose a lot of your consumers just because some gay people in your community thought that was a fantastic campaign. Now, do you read the names? That's an interesting piece where I guess that's a nice life lesson for these youths that you are making a comment and your name is now attached to it.
Yeah.
So now your name is attached to a Huffington Post piece and an LA Times piece and it's all over. So I'm not going to read their names because I don't think that's the point.
Yeah.
I'll stick to black and white expletive gay Oreos. That one's from Derek Arellano. I wanted to read that one.
Yeah.
Some others. What a shame. Guess I'll have to choose another cookie.
Huh.
I now no longer eat Oreos. I wish they had a dislike button. You gay people make me sick. God made us to be man and women, not gay or lesbian. P.S. No more Oreos. That's all in the same comment, which I just think is great.
Hmm.
I'm unliking Oreo because of this. No more Oreos for me or my family. It was one thing if Stephen Lee there, who made that comment 11 minutes ago, was not going to have Oreos for him, but it's for his family now, too.
Hmm.
And then, my favorite, gays can all go kill themselves. They are sinners and will all burn in hell. And that's under the gay Oreo. Now, some people are saying, now I can eat Oreos and feel good about it. Thank you, Nabisco, for taking a stand for equality. Oreos Gay Pride Facebook post is great, the best one. Anyone who eats Oreos is now openly a heretic and should be considered as such. Eating Oreos is now a sin. I didn't know you were the Pope and could make such sweeping changes to religious doctrine. Does this mean that all people who have ever eaten Oreos are now condemned to hell? Sweet Oreo-laden hell. Oh, I kind of want to live in sweet Oreo-laden hell. So anyway, so that's going on with the Oreos. And the Oreos have 26 million Facebook fans. So I haven't looked to see if that's gone up or down, but there's a campaign to try to get people to at least replace all the people who have now disliked Oreos. Mm. But backing up a step, this has now prompted any number of op-eds about corporate pandering to the gays.
Because we have the Occupride.
Yes. We talked about the Occupride last week. And so you have JCPenney. And all these different companies, American Express has a Pride network with more than 1,000 members. Cisco offers LGBT workers a bonus to make up for an irregularity in the U.S. tax code. Now, those things are really good.
Well, they are.
Those are really great things.
Yeah.
But it's one thing if you're competing to have the most creative, gay-friendly internal policy. It's another if you're creating if you don't have those things and you're creating advertising campaigns to pander to the gays.
Right. Those are...
That one could argue is problematic.
It is problematic.
So there's
but
that.
I am happy those places are good places to work. I guess I'm curious now what Nabisco's policies are for their employees. And if they have networks or resources or, you know, really comprehensive non-discrimination policies, et cetera.
Yeah. Oreo still has 26. I'm looking it up right now. Oreo still has 26 million people liking their page, so I don't think it's gone down all that much.
Yeah.
And I'll see if they have any... Wow, I mean, this post just went up a couple days ago. And so the caption next to it is, proudly support love, and then it's the rainbow Oreo cookie. There are 36,000 comments.
Jeez.
219,000 people, including Brattleboro, naturopathic. They like it. They like the post, and it's been shared close to 67,000 times. So I think they're getting some good press out of this. I think they're doing, quite all right there at the Oreo Nabisco company.
Mm.
But yeah, we got to be conscious about the pandering. So Now, this, I don't know what I have to say about this except that I find it a little bit fascinating. So over on one of the columnists for Advocate.com mm-hmm. is Michael Lucas.
Okay.
Michael Lucas is the creator of Lucas Entertainment. Not like E.T. Lucas Entertainment.
No, not like LucasArts.
No. Lucas Entertainment is one of the largest studios producing all-male erotica.
Oh.
This is a big, big adult film, gay adult film company.
Okay.
And he's been criticized. He's certainly done some videos where he's been some kinds of violent to some of the models. They're called models mm-hmm. or actors.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's an interesting columnist. Mm-hmm. So he's got a post that's called Reasons for Pride and Shame. And this is what he says. It's Gay Pride Week in New York, and this year we have a lot to celebrate, but we also still have a long way to march. Here are four things that we can be proud of and four that I think are shameful. It's kind of interesting, okay. All right? So I'm not going to read the whole article. Four things to be proud of, the marriage push.
Okay.
Great. Another thing to be proud of, racial integration. Okay. Another thing to be proud of, resisting the queue. This is an interesting one. Just when it seemed like we had finally settled on a name for ourselves, LGBT for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, there's been a renewed effort to tack the letter Q to the end for queer. Happily, the New York establishment has so far held off. It's not just that queer sounds defensive and angry and so 1990s. It's that once you start adding letters, it's hard to stop. The Toronto Gay Pride Parade is officially in honor, I'm not making this up, of the LGBT T-I-Q-Q-2-S-A communities. That stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, interested, queer, questioning, two-spirit, and allies. I'm questioning that, all right, but believe me, I'm not interested. So this is what Michael Lucas wrote. Very interesting that he's casting queer as defensive and angry. But
right.
Back up a step. Okay, so he's talking about that's kind of a big issue of what letters do we use. And the last thing to be proud of, breaking the crystal, and it's that Crystal meth use is on the decline.
Okay.
All right, so those are four things to be proud of.
Okay.
Big overarching issues.
Yeah.
Four things that are shameful. HIV infections that are on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Celebrity cowards. So like celebrities that, and he cites Anderson Cooper and other people who are not out. Cowards is a kind of a strong word, but there you go. Knee-jerk anti-Israel activism.
What?
In every country but one in the Middle East and the Arab world, LGBT people live in secrecy and fear, loathed and often endangered by cultures dominated by religious fanatics. That one exception is Israel, where gay culture thrives and LGBT people can adopt children and serve openly in the military. So guess which country gets the most heat from progressive activists in the gay community? Israel, of course. Israel's superior record on gay rights is smeared as pinkwashing by activists who turn blind eyes to countries where pink is being violently erased every day. On Sunday, I'll be marching with the Israeli delegation in the New York Gay Pride Parade. I'd be proud if you would join us. So, again, overarching issue. This is all build up to the last thing that causes shame.
Okay.
So, again, we've had marriage equality.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Last one, eyebrow madness.
What?
Lord knows I'm all for making your body look as perfect as it can. Not going to touch that. Although, let's touch that for a second.
All right, yeah.
I mean, perfect. That's a bit of a subjective word,
yeah,
I would assume.
Yes.
Let's move on from that.
Okay.
But sometimes the quest for perfection can tip into the ridiculous, and someone has to take a stand. So I'm going to be brave and say what needs to be said. Young gay men, stop torturing your eyebrows. Use a tweezer here and there, pluck a stray or two, but stop waxing and shaping them into thin little cartoon arches. Embrace your eyebrows, boys. They're yours, not Greta Garbo's. Now, I am assuming that he is being a little bit snarky.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, the tone is so off of this piece that it's hard to... I actually think he might be serious. And someone's going to write in and say, I don't think he actually is serious. But
right.
I think it's possible that he actually means this. And that someone who is in the business, again, is making people look as perfect as possible,
mm-hmm.
actually believes that this is one of the important things to keep in mind. So I'm putting that out there. There are other things happening. You mentioned the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Did you read some good stuff about the Pentagon?
They had their first ever gay pride event.
Look at that.
It's pretty awesome.
Now, there is a poll out there beyond LGBT equality. Jody, what social issues are you most passionate about? Okay. So here are your choices.
Okay.
Poverty, social justice, women's rights, racial inequality and civil rights, reproductive rights and abortion, other, drug laws, or gun laws?
I'm going to have to go with other.
Okay, you are joined by 8%. We don't know what their other was. But poverty and social justice, close to 43%.
That's a piece of my other, but it has a lot more to do with education, food access, nutritional food access, transportation, those kinds of issues that really play into poverty and social justice, but is more specific.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I was kind of in the other, too. All right, so if someone has an opinion on that, they should send an email on over to ken@thisshowsogay.com. And again, as we said at the start of the show, just some great emails this week. So keep sending those over, and we will absolutely, there were some great guest suggestions. We will track down some of those folks and see if we can't get them on the show. We have a new show coming at you next week. You can stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn about the guests for next week. And, of course, go to the Facebook. Join the thousands, right? Because once you're over 1,000, yeah. It's thousands.
Yes.
Okay. You can join the thousands of people who like our Facebook page. And we're trying to do more posts on there because people want to see more content. And you can go on there right now and see the pictures from the concrete quilt that we created last week here in Brattleboro, Vermont. And put it up there specifically because this is something that you can do in your community. It took some work to put it together, but now looking back, not that much.
Beautiful.
And it's beautiful. Just an easy project for people to do, and you get permission from your town, or you don't, and it becomes subversive. We did. But there are pictures there on the Facebook page, so go do that. So enjoy the last couple days of Pride Month. It's almost over, and then no more Pride.
Well, actually,
we can't have Pride anymore.
We in the United States will have Pride Month being over. However, yes. I will be in time for Prince Edward Island's Gay Pride.
Well, look at that.
Weekend when I go on vacation.
They have a parade.
They do.
All right.
If
so
you blink, you miss it.
Jody will maybe take a recording device and record a segment from. You should.
I suppose I should. They play some fun music. We went last year.
All right. Jody will do, I'm promising it here, Jody will do a segment from Prince Edward Island, and we will play that later on. It will be co-hosted by Jen. She's been on the show before. If I promise it, it makes it so. Get out there. Go enjoy the last couple days of Pride. When it's over, run up to Prince Edward Island, which is in Iceland, and you can keep celebrating Pride. And while you're doing all these things, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?